Hello, I'm Veronica's Caresbreak. Thanks for joining me. Let's begin then with a special programme to mark
the 70th anniversary of the start of World War II back in September 1939 with an act of remembrance.
A landmark date providing us with an opportunity to bring you echoes of the pontificate of that era. The story began on March the 2nd, 1939, when Cardinal Eugenio Pacelli was elected successor of Peter, taking the name of Pius XII.
Germany was quick to react. The very next day, the Berliner Morgenpost, a Nazi propaganda paper, wrote,
"The election of Cardinal Pacelli is not accepted with favour in Germany because he was always opposed to Nazism."
6 months later, the world was at war, and the new Pope was making a last desperate appeal for peace through the microphones of Vatican radio.
Minaccio è il pericolo, ma è ancora tempo. Nulla è perduto con la pace. Tutto.
Nothing is lost with peace. Everything could be lost with war.
Less than a month after the outbreak of the Second World War, Pius XII published his first encyclical, Summi Pontificatus, on the unity of human society. In the encyclical, the new Pope branded racial prejudice as the most pernicious of modern errors, and condemned, quote, "the forgetfulness of that law of human solidarity, dictated by the equality of rational nature in all persons to whatever people they belong," unquote. On October the 28th, 1939, in Britain, the Times commented on the encyclical under the headline, "New Idolatry Condemned," and across the Atlantic, the New York Times carried an almost identical headline.
Pope condemns persecution.
The New York Times editorial ran as follows.
The voice of Pius XII is a lonely voice in the silence and darkness enveloping Europe this Christmas. He is about the only ruler left on the continent of Europe who dares to raise his voice at all.
Della vera grandezza, che imponendo silenzio alle voci della passione.
With this kind of documented, dated evidence, how is it that the memory of Pius XII is still marred by criticism and accusations that not only did he fail to condemn the Nazi ideology, but that he was silent over the murder of 6.5 million Jews? Listen now to the Pope's first Christmas message addressed to the world at war on Christmas Eve 1939.
Questa guerra mondiale e tutto ciò che le si connette, si tratti dei precedenti remoti o prossimi o dei suoi procedimenti.
The world seems to have forgotten Christ's message of peace, the voice of reason, of Christian brotherhood. We have had to witness acts that are irreconcilable with international law, with the principles of human rights, and with the most basic human sentiments. I refer to the premeditated aggression of a minority of hard-working and peaceful people, to the atrocities committed against non-combatants, refugees, the aged, women and children, acts which cry out to God for vengeance.
And then, as the horror of the war became more explicit, Pope Pius XII too became more explicit in his condemnation of the atrocities. Again, it was Christmas, and the war had been raging for 3 years.
Questo voto l'umanità lo deve agli innumerevoli morti che giacciono sepolti nei campi di guerra. Il sacrificio della loro vita nel compimento del loro dovere è l'olocausto
Hundreds of thousands of persons, through no fault of their own, sometimes only for reasons of nationality or race, are destined to death or to a gradual extinction.
And once again, Germany was quick to react. The Gestapo, Hitler's feared police force, issued a report on that message, which was delivered to the Führer himself. This is what it read.
In a manner never known before, the Pope has repudiated the National Socialist New European Order. It is true, the Pope does not refer to the National Socialists in Germany by name, but his speech is one long attack on everything we stand for. Here, he is clearly speaking on behalf of the Jews.
I ask you, what kind of race could he have had in mind, except the Jews? You see, everybody understood this perfectly well, and especially the Nazi authorities understood that, as did the fascist authorities, and there were many protests about this.
Jesuit Father Peter Gumpel, relator for the cause of canonization of Pius XII, knew him personally.
Of these messages, understood it perfectly well. I said those who were able, because the Vatican radio at the time had a very weak transmission, and it was not easy to capture it. Of course, in Germany, foreign newspapers could not be published. Listening to foreign radios during the war was punishable by death. So many of the statements of the Pope couldn't reach the German public. But I have lived in Germany under Hitler, at least till 1939, and every Catholic knew exactly what the Catholic Church, the bishops, and the Pope were thinking about the persecution of Jews. I think Pius XII did everything he could possibly do to save Jews, and many Jews have admitted that, and Jewish historians and others.
Albert Einstein was one prominent member of the Jewish community who was quick to recognize Pius XII's courage in speaking out against the Nazi ideology. He said as much in an article published in Time magazine in 1940.
Being a lover of freedom, when the revolution came in Germany, I looked to the universities to defend it, knowing that they had always boasted of their devotion to the case of truth. But no, the universities immediately were silenced. Then I looked to the great editors of the newspapers, whose flaming editorials in days gone by had proclaimed their love of freedom. But they, like the universities, were silenced in a few short weeks. Only the church stood squarely across the path of Hitler's campaign for suppressing truth.
In 1943, Hitler's propaganda chief, Joseph Goebbels, wrote in his diary,
"Again and again, reports reached us that the Pope is feverishly at work during this entire crisis."
Documented testimonies like these are overlooked or blatantly ignored by those who insist on their own one-sided view of history.
And it is a sorry fact that now, 20 years or so later, the attack was launched against Pius XII, that he, for financial reasons or out of cowardice or because he was pro-Hitler, did never do anything for the Jews. This is a real falsification of history. Nowadays, many people who write about it, I'm not speaking now only about 20 years, many of these people were not even born. Many of these people have never lived under a political dictatorship and a police state, as we had to live in Germany at that time. And therefore, they are practically, psychologically, not in a position to assess what really went on in Germany and what the possibilities were to do something for people. I think that's the reason. There may be other reasons underneath, because, to tell you very frankly, I have talked with a number of Jewish scholars and journalists, and it has been amazing to me that if I asked them whether they ever read or saw or knew about the 11 volumes published by the Vatican on what has happened during the Second World War, a number of them said they had never even heard of it, let alone studied it.
Our first job was to get out the official public and name what is in the archives. But there are many things which are not in the archives and can't be, simply the human drama behind all these papers. So what I would do in the summers and the winters, I would make the rounds of the various archives in Bonn and Koblenz and Berlin and Paris and London and Washington, D.C., where the follow-up of these situations are on the record. And so much of this case...
Jesuit historian Father Robert Graham, foremost expert on the Vatican and World War II, spent 14 years researching and writing those 11 volumes. He, too, knew Pius XII personally.
And the four volumes that the Vatican published of the papal relief of during all during the war has been systematically put aside, ignored. Well, now, that's not honest. It isn't even moral. But it's certainly a proof that of the partiality of the type of propaganda that we've been reading in the press for a good number of years now. This series is known as the Victims of the War. There was a lot about Rome, but also the things that what happened in Poland and in Russia and in Germany and in France also, in terms of the predicament of the poor, innocent victims of the war.
Today, the millions of suffering children are looking with appealing eyes to the vicar of Jesus. Let them come to us. Let no one hold them off. We love them all with the love of Christ, and we cannot rest so long as the pangs of hunger make them cry out for help.
I am perfectly convinced, first of all, that Pope Pius XII's would have received absolutely nothing in the way of saving Jews if he had spoken out. And there are several arguments to substantiate this fact. He seriously considered to do so. And in his Christmas elocution and elsewhere, he spoke about the illegitimacy and the evil to persecute people just on account of their religion and their race. And I said already that everybody understood, at least also the people who knew about it, and the Nazi authority and the fascist authorities complained about these allusions that the Pope made there. He did not mention the term Jews, but that because the term Jew worked as a red cloth on Hitler, and it would have aggravated the situation. And I am personally convinced, having lived under Hitler and having studied these things for many years now, that any public statement of the Pope's not only would not have saved a single Jewish life, but would have aggravated the situation of the Jews and at the same time would have caused an even severer persecution of the Roman Catholic Church and thus have prevented so many Catholics to help Jews in all secrecy. And this has been done, and unfortunately in contemporary literature is belittled or simply ignored or glossed over, and as if this had not happened.
Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.